and weird power games.
We are out of time. Thank you so much to my guests today, Erin Rooney and Kate Islam.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've been in the Vulture's Nest. Coming up is So Hot Right Now with Sophie Lai. Stay tuned. You're on 2SER 107.3.
Oh. 2SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Hello, hello. You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. My name is Sophie. Big thanks to The Vulture's Nest for another fantastic squawking show. We are the show that talks everything that is arts, culture, including pop culture that is happening all around Sydney and around the world. And oh my gosh, big, big show for you this week. The Sydney Writers' Festivals is just about on our doorstep. And we're going to be chatting to Miriam Azam, who is a writer and teacher, and she'll be part of the panel Women, Colour and Western Sydney. Also, Blake Howard returns finally for Gaggle of Geeks. Yes, oh my gosh, we've had a bit of a hiatus, but Blake is back. He's been a very busy man, like, you know, getting a cred from Taika Waititi for his cosplaying outfits at former alum Maria Lewis's wedding. So kudos to Blake. But we'll be chatting some very exciting news from the DC universe. Also, we're going to be talking about Deadhouse, a new play that's coming out. It's Tales of a Sydney Morgue, so something a little macabre, but I'm interested to see where it goes. And of course, right here on 2SER, we're all about the stories, ideas and music. So we're going to kick things off with a bit of a funky beat. This is from Tom Misch with the tune Disco Yes featuring Poppy Ajuda, and it's from his brand new album Geography, which came out a couple of weeks ago. Enjoy.
You to know.
UTS Breaking News. Walkley Award-winning journalist Monica Attard joins UTS's famous journalism program in 2018. As Attard says, it's crunch time for journalism, so education has never been more important. Make a date with your future. Sign up now to join Attard by registering for one of our advanced journalism postgrad info sessions in June. Head to pg.uts.edu.au today. UTS School of Communication sponsors 2SER.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. There is a new wave of litro in which class, race, culture, faith and gender intersect. This morning we are joined by Miriam Azam. Miriam is a member of Sweatshop, Western Sydney Literacy Movement and a primary school teacher in Kellyville. In 2015, Miriam was awarded Westward's Emerging Writers Fellowship and her debut poetry collection, The Hijab Files, will be published next month. Miriam joins us this morning to talk more about the Sydney Writers Festival's panel, Women, Colour and Western Sydney. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, not a problem. Anytime. But yeah, your book, The Hijab Files, your new collection of poetry, that's out in a month. How does that feel?
That's really exciting. I've actually been working on this book for the past 4 years now. It actually came out of my creative writing honors project, which basically examined representations of Muslim women and the hijab in contemporary poetry. And what I found was that these representations tended to be very orientalist. It was about the silenced, repressed Muslim woman, not a lot of agency. And in these representations, we weren't actually getting Muslim women who wear the hijab writing about them. So I decided to write a small collection of poems as part of my honours project. And then after that, I expanded it into this collection, The Hijab Files. So it's very exciting.
Mm. So did you actually kind of get other women who wear the hijab to also tell their stories in this collection?
Well, the poems in this collection are based on a lot of my personal experiences and the experiences of friends and family that I know. So it's very much grounded in real life experiences of Muslim women.
Mm. I mean, you see it all the time on social media. People are raging about, you know, the lack of agency these women have. And yet when they speak, they get shut down. How do you kind of like, counter that?
Look, I think the most important thing is just to create platforms for Muslim women to share their experiences and also share their work and invite them into these kinds of literary spaces where they weren't so much invited before.
Fantastic. Now, as mentioned earlier, you are a member of a Sweatshop. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So Sweatshop is a literacy movement founded by Michael Muhammad Ahmed, which basically is all about empowering people through literature, specifically people of colour from Western Sydney, for two reasons. Firstly, just to have more representation of people of colour on the literary scene, but also to have representation of Western Sydney as a place and a setting, because so much of Australian literature focuses on the bush or focuses on living in the city or the harbour, when the reality is that so many of us live out in the suburbs. So Sweatshop does a lot of workshops with young people in high schools in Western Sydney. They publish their work in anthologies, and it also does a lot of work developing young writers coming out of Western Sydney. So they have a fortnightly workshop at Western Sydney University where they workshop their writing.
Excellent. Are you kind of seeing a bit of a shift of late of how people are now starting to see Western Sydney as more than just the suburbs? Like, it's now becoming a bit more of a cultural hub in a way.
Definitely. Like, last year, Sweatshop had an event at the Sydney Writers Festival. It was the launch of their latest anthology, The Big Black Thing, Chapter 1. And we had more than 100 people turn up. The venue was actually full. Staff had to stand at the door and tell people not to come in because there were just too many people and the venue wasn't big enough. And I think that the organisers weren't expecting to have so much interest in an event about Western Sydney writers. So it's definitely becoming more popular.
Do you think it's also because people are actually finally seeing their stories reflected on the page in a way?
Absolutely. Yes.
Excellent. So on this Sydney Writers Festival panel, you were discussing, alongside Shirley Leigh, Evelyn Araluen and Winnie Dunn, kind of a sort of new wave of Australian literature. Can you tell us a bit more of what's changed and what is kind of changing in this kind of area?
I think that what is changing is that people are more focused on writing their stories now and writing stories that aren't often heard about. So, for example, Winnie Dunn, who I've worked with before, she's written extensively about her Tongan heritage. So, for example, she'd write about, you know, the cultural significance of getting your period from a Tongan point of view. Mm. So these are the kinds of stories that you don't often hear or you don't hear about at all, and that we're finally getting to hear about that. So not only is it about diversity of culture, but it's also about empowering women as well and hearing women's stories and those sort of experiences specific to that.
So on this panel, will you be talking more about your works or more of your experiences in this area?
The works and experiences just go hand in hand because we're really focused on writing based on experience. So, of course, you know, there's creative license that we take with the stories that we tell, but they are mostly grounded in real life experience. And I think that's something that readers are really looking for nowadays. They're looking for, you know, as much as we can get an authentic story.
So with authentic story, when is it, you know, some people get offended when someone else tells that story who isn't from that culture. What do you feel about that?
I think that that's, it is reasonable, you know, to be offended at somebody else telling your story, because so much of history has been about taking other people's stories and then finding a way to dominate that culture by doing so. So I think that, it's really important not to encroach on another person's story. And the best way to do that is to write from your own personal experience. To give you an example, in my poetry collection, I've written a poem that's about the experience of wearing the face veil, the niqab. Mm-hmm. Now, I wear a hijab, but I've never worn a niqab in my life. So it's not going to be authentic if I write the poem from the point of view of myself wearing it. So I framed the poem as myself, the hijab wearing persona, interacting with a friend who does wear a niqab, and then just framing my perspective through that interaction. So it's very clear to the reader that I'm not claiming all kinds of feelings that come out of the experience of wearing the niqab. It's my view as an outsider on it. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned it before with the whole outlook of Orientalism when you kind of encounter that. Is it getting better, do you think, or is it just still rampant, that kind of writing where, you know, people do take that perspective?
I do think it's getting better, and it's mostly getting better because we're getting a diversity of voices now in the literature field, and that's what's making it better.
Excellent. Well, we can't wait to hear more at the panel. It's on the 5th of May at the Seymour Centre from 11:30 to 12:30 PM. But Miriam, thank you so much for chatting to us today.
You're most welcome.
We'll put all those info on the 2SCR.com along with this podcast and also where you can get tickets to the panel. Going to jump back into the music now. Here's a bit of Jerry Lee Lewis with Folsom Prison Blues.
I hear the train coming, rolling around the bend. I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I've been stuck in Folsom Prison, time keeps dragging by. When I think about them women, Lord, I hang my head and cry. But I bet that rich folks sleeping in a fancy dining car, drinking Jack Daniels whiskey, smoking Cuban cigars. I'm stuck in a Folsom Prison, time keeps dragging by. When I hear that freight train whistle, I hang my head and cry. But I me, son. You ought to be a good boy, Jerry. Don't mess around with no gun. But I shot me a boy in Memphis, mama. I really didn't want to just watch him die. Now when I think of good old Memphis, Tennessee, I hang my head and cry. Yeah, play it. That railroad train of mine, so I'd move it on a little further down the line, far from close prison. That's where I want to be. All them women keep a moving, the torches rock and roll and Jerry Lee.
Canadian songstress Tara Lightfoot on her national Australian tour. With her bluesy soul, vivid lyrics and virtuosic guitar style, discover her album, New Mistakes.
We can try.
Tara Lightfoot, playing at the Brass Monkey in Cronulla on April 24th and May 2nd, and at Lazy Bones in Marrickville on April 26th. For more details on all of her gigs, including her appearance at Gumball, head to taralightfoot.com. Tara Lightfoot sponsors 2SER.
This Anzac Day, the Bank Hotel are once again turning their beer garden into a two-up arena like no other, with the infamous Tora Hyman running it all until sundown. Yeah Nah Yeah DJs and Lifeguard Lewis will be playing tunes in Uncle Hop's from midday, and $2 from every jug of Reshes sold will be going to Legacy. Anzac Day at the Bank, from midday April 25th at the Bank Hotel Newtown. The Bank Hotel sponsors 2SER 107.3.
We'll be right back.
That there was Genera Jarrell with Gibbon in the Mist. On top of that, you also heard from Jerry Lee Lewis. Bit of old school stuff for you this morning with Folsom Prison Blues. You are listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. Now it's time for your pop culture fix.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with
Blake Howard
and Sophie Lye.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, geeks. Happy beautiful Saturday morning in Sydney.
Oh, it's so good to have you back for our weekly geekly.
Oh, yeah. Look, guys, I'm really sorry. Lots of hiatuses, lots of dressing like Taika Waititi to attend friends' weddings. Things happened.
Yes.
I wasn't able to be here, but the geekness has rolled on.
The anticipation
for Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're drowning in billboards with Iron Man's face on them and Captain America's delicious beard,
Mm-mm-mm.
We're going to go to DC this morning.
Yeah, next week's going to be a Marvel bonanza, so I'm glad we're doing this DC thing first.
Yeah, we're kind of like, you know, the national broadcaster who has to, like, play fair. You know, you give the each political party their go. We're going with DC because next week is a Marvel bonanza, as I said.
And it's a weird week for DC.
Oh, my God.
You have, like, really great news and then really what the hell news.
Yeah, like, guys, so number one, we'd love, you know, this is our 10-minute version of Gaggle of Geeks. We'd love you to check out our 2SER Gaggle of Geeks podcast. It's linked up there. You can just search Gaggle of Geeks on iTunes. You can find us. Always, you know, our little snippet of the show is here on, you know, Saturday mornings, So Hot Right Now with Soph. And one story that flagged this week that we talked a lot about in the podcast, but we wanted to talk again about, was Cathy Yan, who's this young independent Asian American filmmaker who has just been reportedly attached to a second Harley Quinn film. And what that means is they're kicking out the idea of another Suicide Squad film. They're going Harley herself, and it's looking like it could potentially be the Birds of Prey movie, which would then kick off a couple of characters, which would then potentially go and run into their own projects, like, for example, you know, Barbara Gordon's Batgirl, Poison Ivy, Catwoman, Katana, and Huntress, depending on which version of Birds of Prey that you're familiar with.
Mm. Now, I'm really hoping it's, you know, the one you just mentioned by Gail Simone, because, oh, that was a fantastic run.
Yeah.
If you haven't read it, find it in your local comic book store, Gail Simone's Birds of Prey. Excellent reading.
Gail Simone is a phenomenal writer just in general. So anything Gail Simone, you're never really going to go wrong. But the cool thing is Cathy Yan has just made a movie called Dead Pigs, which won a Best Dramatic Ensemble at the Sundance Film Festival. And so it actually hasn't received a distribution deal yet. So we don't know too much about when it's going to come out for us to check it out. But clearly the buzz is there. The fact that it won an ensemble award is promising. And it's really good. Like, DC have kind of taken one of the smart moves out of the Marvel playbook, if you like, of hiring really phenomenal directors that have really unique voices and trying to tap into some of their creative magic. And in the last couple of films, you know, we've seen Patty Jenkins with Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
We've got James Wan coming up with Aquaman. We've got Ava DuVernay coming over with New Gods. And now we've got Cathy Yan diving into Suicide Squad 2 or Harley Quinn or Birds of Prey or whatever it turns out to be. But it looks like a solo Harley Quinn movie at this stage. So some cool stuff happening in DC.
Oh, and even more interesting, the script's going to be penned by Christina Hodson, who is working on the Batman script as well.
Yeah, Christina Hodson. Again, like when Joss Whedon jumped off of Batgirl about a month or two ago now, you know, there was an outpouring of a whole bunch of amazing talent that came out and said, look, I want to write this script. And Warner Brothers met with a whole bunch of people. So again, another lass in charge, and so it should be, you know, in charge of Batgirl, because there's so many great Batgirl stories and so many amazing female creatives that would like be jumping up and down to adapt it. So sounds really great.
Yeah. Ladies and people of color. It is.
So from a really life affirming, you know, really hopeful story about people of color being involved in Warner Brothers and sort of them cross-pollinating that universe again, making it a bit more dynamic and vibrant, we go to one of the goddamn weirdest stories I've seen. Oh. I reckon in maybe a year of doing this podcast, like in the last year, there hasn't been. Now, there have been variations of this headline going around, but one of my mine and So's big news recommendations is Dark Horizons, which is an Australian-based movie news website run by our friend Garth Franklin. And his title for this story is Smallville Actress Arrested Over Sex Cult.
And that's pretty much most like what everyone's written pretty much. I mean, you go to The Guardian, it's Smallville actor arrested in connection with sex cult. News.com, Smallville actress also arrested in association with sex cult. So yeah, everyone has sex cults in pretty much all their headlines, so not just Dark Horizons.
No, but oh my God, Alison Mack, mm-hmm. a Smallville actress, and this is the first I'm hearing of it, and Soph knows a little bit more about it, was part of a sex cult known as Nexium, I believe is the pronunciation, Soph, you said, but it's spelled in all caps, NXIVM. Mm. And she apparently was last seen chasing the cult's leader, Keith Raniere, as cops hauled him away because they were hiding out in Mexico. He's been extradited to the United States. And it started, I mean, look, seriously, cults are in, like, sex cults and weirdness are just on the tip of everyone's tongue at the moment. Because Wild Wild Country's on Netflix at the moment, blowing people's minds with the Rajneeshi sort of weird self-help sex cult, you know, that happened in the United States and internationally with Bhagwan there. And now, like, this one's just popped up and I heard nothing about this, but you knew more about this before me, so if you've heard about this before.
Yeah, so when he was arrested, that was like 3 months ago, and that's when everyone's like, what is this cult? And it started off like as a self-help kind of group where, you have people coming in and he would try and like lure in actresses so they can be mentors and be like, yes, this is all self-help and wellness, that kind of jazz, which then escalated into a sex cult like most of them end up doing.
Can we just say the way that Soph just said self-help and wellness was as creepy as you could possibly say it. Like it was like she leaned into the microphone, self-help and wellness. All right. So when people say that creepy phrase to you, you know that it might have sex cult undertones. And what's even crazier, so Kristen Kreuk, who was Lana Lang in the Smallville series, Battlestar Galactica actress Nikki Klein was also in this group. But apparently, like, this is what the crazy thing about Alison Mack is. Not only is, this Smallville actress, like, right in the center of this sex cult, and in doing sort of their more weird and perverted things, she actually allegedly came up with the idea that they are branded near their groin if they're part of this sex cult and had a nickname. So what was her nickname?
Pimp Mac.
Pimp Mac.
Oh my gosh. Like, she was Chloe Sullivan, who was always talking about there's all these weird stuff happening in Smallville, and we have a wall of weird. She's like spot bang in the middle of it now.
Yeah, she's sex cult branding people.
Oh my God.
So that next Smallville rewatch for y'all is going to be very interesting. So enjoy. It's going to definitely inspire me to go back and watch a few episodes, that's for sure. And any YouTube boffins out there who are fans of Gaggle Geeks, if you know any sort of Chloe supercuts that we can find on YouTube, I'd really be interested in checking that out.
Yeah, but she faces up to 15 years in prison.
Yeah, I mean, they had 160,000 people in this group that started out as, all these cults, it starts out with a charismatic dude and the guise of self-help and then occasionally, free love, and then it becomes psychopathic. Like, it literally, it's the same, it's almost archetypal. It's just really weird to see that people just continue to fall in the same traps. But I think it's like, I don't know, it's a bit of a weird sign of our times, right? Because, what happened sort of post Vietnam and then post-World War II in the United States and sort of now is where these things are starting to reemerge, or at least awareness of them are, is after these big, huge significant cultural milestones or wars or things like that, people are looking for answers. People are looking for something, you know, and maybe a traditional religion doesn't offer it. And then these weird vultures come in with like, oh, self-help, well-being, and then like turn into manic, maniacal sex cults. Look, so it's just weird.
They target the vulnerable at their lowest points. And that's how they get them. Suddenly it's like from one person to 200 and they have their own cult. It's insane. But it's just really amazing that someone who was, you know, relatively successful fell into this trap and then decided to be, yep, I'm going to start branding people and starving them and making them ultimate sex slaves.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, lest we forget that the biggest movie star in the world is part of a cult.
Your fave.
I think we could just move right on.
Your fave.
Move right on. We all know. But yeah,
he who shall not be named, is that what we're calling him now?
Yeah, we're just not going to talk about it. It's been done. Alex Gibney's documentary. You know, just seek it out. Alex Gibney's documentary. You'll know what. You'll know where it's at. You know who we're talking about.
Oh, but Blake, that is such a weird week. Like, great news and then really weird news for Gaggle of Geeks.
It's just breaking. Weird stuff.
Weird.
But welcome back to some weird.
I know. Such great fun. But if you want more fun, the podcast, because I managed to prod you into another rant.
Oh my God. She did, guys. She goaded me into it. Started talking about Ron Howard comparing Solo and saying it was inspired by Heat and Thief, and I went down a rabbit hole.
It was great.
Angry.
All I did was just like two little pros, and suddenly Blake.
So just what you guys don't see is that Soph prods all quietly, all super innocent, and then just sits there with this grin on her face like, I did it again. I dragged him down. I knew he was going to do it. But yeah, no, so a bit of fun. Have a listen.
Yeah.
If you want some more Weekly Geekly in longer form.
Well, Blake, so glad to have you back. Catch you next week for the Bonanza. That will be Infinity War.
Infinity War. See some of you geeks on our Tuesday night midnight screenings for Infinity War. Soph and I will be there trying to coordinate a place to do that. But have some fun and have a great week. Thanks, Soph.
Thanks, Blake. Bye.
Bye.
We'll put all those links of where you can find the podcast as well as what you just heard on 2SER.com. Catch Blake and all his reviews on graffiti with punctuation.com or on Twitter. You can talk to us at 2SER, to him at Blake is Batman, or me at Soph_Lie, and join the geeky conversation. Coming up next, though, oh, I'm so excited for this. If you're a murderino, like someone who really loves a good murder mystery, or just real true crime, listen up. Leonard Lawson and Louisa Collins are two people infamous for their horrific crimes. And up next, we're going to be chatting about Deadhouse, Tales of Sydney Morgue, which is a new immersive theatre work that brings these tales of murder, assault and poison to life. How exciting does that sound? Holy moly. All right. Here's a tune now from Pool Room. He's a producer out of Sydney, Charles Waldron, actually an ex-2SER alumni. And he's got his new EP coming out, but this is the latest single. It's called Figure It Out.
You took your airplane and I'll take mine. I'll be taking my time till the end of my days. You think you're so great, well, I've got news. You're petitioning out of place and I'm still gonna be late every day. so full of these thoughts. Wish that I could be done, but I know that I can't. You're taking over whether I like it or not. Just make sure that you slow down.
Photography, Power and Passion is an unmissable photography seminar. A jam-packed day featuring award-winning artists, photojournalists, curators, documentary photographers and more. Exploring the shifting shape of media and art through thought-provoking discussions and presentations. Part of Head On Photo Festival 2018, the seminar will be held on Sunday, May 6th at Palace Cinemas Chevelle, Paddington. Book online now at headon.com.au. 2SER is a proud media partner of Head On Photo Festival.
Hi, I'm Craig Donarski, Director of Casula Powerhouse Art Centre in Liverpool. Coming up in May, we've got a lot of interesting things on offer, including the Head On Photo Festival, a literature weekend featuring the Gritty Lit Crime Writers Festival and the Sydney Writers Festival's Owning Your Story. On Saturday the 12th of May, you can look forward to Alexis Eclectic and Grace Kingston doing a fashion launch, and then from the 19th of May, the 65th Blake Prize launch. Our galleries are always free entry. We're open 7 days a week, except for public holidays. You can always add on breakfast, brunch or lunch at Bellbird Dining and Bar and see everything that's on offer at casulapowerhouse.com.
I'm back. Sorry about the hiatus, honestly not sure what it was, but I think it was the acid, God forbid. Something that I love so dearly could become something so clearly bad for psyche, bad for mommy, trust me. I'm not deluded like you thought, after all never sought out your love, no. Just a conversation satiating my goofy thoughts. But who could blame me? 19-year-old virgin Mary, my child is nothing scary, she's more of a canary than a boy. She means no harm, though she's got no charm, just don't be alarmed, cause fast movements spook her too, lest you roll up a do for the sharing. Oh, yeah, it's not romantic, no, I swear it's just a show of my friendship, cause I'm affectionate. Oh, and you don't really love me, you're never thinking of me. Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know that. But still I can't stop chasing, my mind's getting frustrating. Help me through that. Positivity seeps into me, gets dulled by all the extra. We'd never say it out loud, but for some reason I am proud of how I alter my thought. Get caught after aboard this ship, cause I'm sinking. Stop thinking the way I used to do, and I can see it in the way I act. And I can see a dreamer going back. But regrets never have an alibi, so I do not have an excuse not to try. Upon reflection,
reflection, it's perception that will shape my intervention. If my friends were not around me, who knows if I would have found me? But their understanding was everything to me. Who knows if they weren't there, maybe I'd not be free of the shackles that held me so very tightly. Know that it's in my head, but that's my frightening. You reach your hand out to me and I grip my arm. Pull me out of quicksand with warmth and with your charm. Though we were never lovers, never meant to be, I swear all of you people are now part of me. You don't really love me. You never thinking of me. Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know that. But still I can't stop chasing. My mind's getting frustrated. Help me through that. I'd help you through that. When you don't really love me, you never thinking.
That there was Imbi, the girl with the tune Acidic. You're here on It's So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. Deadhouse Tales of Sydney Morgues brings to life the horrendous crimes of two infamous criminals, Leonard Lawson and Louisa Collins. Taking place at the Rocks Discovery Museum, audience members are invited to explore the three levels of this building as these infamous crimes are played out. Joining us on the show this morning is executive producer Stephen Carnell and Jackie Robson, who plays the leading role of Louisa. Good morning.
Hey, Sophie, how are you?
Good morning, Sophie.
Big production. You've two plays that are playing alternate weeks. How does it all work?
So the Deadhouse season consists of two plays in rotation. One play is called Leonard Lawson Portrait of an Artist, which is a story of the infamous Lenny Lawson, who was an absolute infamous criminal, but also a comic book artist. And his story is astonishing. You know how true crime is always crazier than anything you can come up with? His story is amazing and awful, but also he gets his comeuppance at the end, so it's very fun to play that. The other story we do is the story of the last woman hanged. Her name is Louisa Collins, and she was the last woman hanged in New South Wales, but she's also the last woman hanged in Australia. And her story is fascinating because she was subject to four trials before they found a guilty verdict. And that has not happened any other time. It's from a point of historical perspective. A lot of people ask the question, why was a woman subject to four trials to find a guilty verdict when, and her crime, she was accused of murdering two husbands, poisoning them. That in itself is heinous and awful, but why was her crime held down to a lower standard? Whichever way you want to look at it, why was she subject to four trials? And other criminals who have perpetuated other crimes of similar sort of intensity, why were they not? Mm. So it had a lot. There was a very strong women's movement around at the time that were asking these questions. Why was she this target? The questions weren't from so much about, you know, whether she did it, and the evidence is really circumstantial. The part of the reason there were four trials is because they couldn't find a guilty verdict, and in several of the trials, in most cases, the jurors could not even begin to come to a conclusion. Mm. So why was the Crown so interested in seeing this woman hanged? And the women's movement at the time was like looking at this as an example as to this, again, another example of disparity in the way the men and women were treated. Women did not have the vote either, so their voices were silenced. Louisa was tried and convicted by an all-male jury.
Of course.
There were no women representing her in the court. Media of the time, public press was run by men in editorial positions too. So the narrative around her was very specific. It's interesting, her story was even brought to Parliament and was put in front of Sir Henry Parkes.
Oh, wow. Mm. Father of Federation.
Absolutely, exactly. And the the person who introduced it, Melville, basically interrupted question time around estimates and said, I'd like to bring to everybody's attention the story of Louisa Collins, and this was after the verdict had come down, after the fourth trial, about her being found guilty. Why are we letting this happen? Why is this woman being subject to this kind of treatment when this hasn't happened before? And it speaks to a larger question around capital punishment and, you know, at that stage, they were still a penal colony, and if they wanted to move forward, you know, why were they still hanging on to old and very sort of draconian ways of justice? And so there was this fascinating debate held in Parliament, and Sir Henry Parkes was put on the spot, sort of like, why are we letting this happen? And his argument ultimately was, well, women are just as capable of perpetuating terrible crimes as men, and if we should not interfere with the justice system, we have a triumvirate for a reason, so we shouldn't get involved in that. But also, even though the interesting, he's a dichotomy as well, but even though he was anti-capital punishment, he was not going to stop this happening or intervene in any way. Again, an all-male parliament debating on the life of a woman. Mm-hmm. And in the galleries, you had some very very vocal women from the women's movement pointing out, you know, we don't have a voice here and yeah, we should have a voice in this. And then it went to the governor, to Lord Carrington at the time, who was, you know, in the position of having to reluctantly weigh on this and not a particular fan of Australia, preferred to be back in Britain where it was cool, having to speak to why is this, I don't want to have to deal with this. Why is this woman being hanged? But I actually don't want to know why. I don't want to get involved. Leave me out of it. You know, and was even subject to an appeal by her daughter. And he wouldn't see her. And so it's interesting. Like, you can, if you separate the crime from the person, or if you separate the case from her gender, it starts to get a much, it's very hard to sort of look at this as a case of justice well actioned at all.
Yeah.
And begs a lot of questions, which then spawned a lot of changes in the legal system after that.
Wow.
So that's it in a nutshell. But we can't represent all that in the story.
I was going to say, that's a lot to, like, you know, deal with.
Yes, pretty much the focus of our play is about revisiting the four trials and the key pieces of evidence which were brought out for and against, and capturing the spirit of the time and the circumstances that she was in. The writer Gina Sheen also is very interested in exploring, again, the invisible voice of the women and the invisible presence of Louisa, even though she's physically there, but her, you know, she doesn't really get to say very much.
Yeah.
And she pled for her life in any other channel she could. She was writing to people all in the period of time she was in jail. But in the court system, she did not have a voice.
Mm. I mean, these two cases, they were kind of exhumed from the old Sydney morgue and coroner's court. What kind of drew you to these two stories in particular? I mean, Louisa, clearly, amazing backstory, but I'm sure there are, like, heaps of stories that come out of that old morgue.
The way it happened was, I actually did a show in the same venue a couple of years ago, and I love working in that place. I love immersive theatre, so I was looking for a connection with place, and then realised across the road was the old Sydney morgue and coroner's court that was there for 120 years. And then thinking that there's probably hundreds of interesting stories, because the concept being dead house happens regularly with different stories.
Mm.
So this is the first dead house. And I pulled up about a dozen or so stories that, you know, where people had been connected to the place, and gave those to the two writers, Robert Armstrong and Gina Sheen, and they really selected those two because that's what appealed to them. As Jackie said, Gina was very interested in the perspective of, you know, a woman being crushed in a male society in 1888, and Robert was interested in a psychopath out of control who happened to be a comic book artist, because Robert is not a psychopath out of control, but he is a
absolutely
comic book
not
artist and a writer. And he likes, I've worked with Robert before, he likes the quirky. And again, you know, in times of Harvey Weinstein and, you know, men sexually abusing women, Lenny was there. But the story is really about how he manipulated people, particularly women. Jackie plays two of those and very skillfully plays Jean Turnbull, the headmistress of Skeggs, who, along with the help of the schoolgirls, defeat Lenny finally and even beat him up, and he's sent off to jail for the rest of his life. So there's a strong a strong connection with contemporary issues in both these plays.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, with Louisa, you know, oppression and from the patriarchy, and with Lenny, like, with the whole Me Too movement. But it's also, because they're also old, it's just, is it sad that these issues are still happening today?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is. And true crime and stories, historical stories, they're useful to bring out again to remind people that as much as we want to change, we also have to realise where we haven't progressed from. History teaches us things right now. Yeah, you don't always leave it behind, so...
I'm finding the connection. I mean, I'm a true crime buff. I'm a history buff. I'm a tour guide in part of the rest of my life. And just bringing all these things together has been really pleasurable. As Jackie was saying, even having an actor, David Attrell, who looks remarkably like Sir Henry Parkes, playing
He's so wonderful.
And recreating those scenes in the courtrooms in New South Wales Parliament, you know, in back rooms with doctors looking at evidence. And it's been a fascinating journey for the last, 4 or 5 months.
Yes, it has. And the interesting from the playing in the Lenny Lawson story, that's been a hard one to get our heads around in terms of we are in no way trying to glorify this man, but his story is incredible. And it's that thing where, again, life is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
And for a person who apparently was very mentally not very well to have gotten away with abusing women as horribly as he did, to then get totally taken down by a bunch of girls at Skeggs in Mossvale.
Yeah.
It's a pretty inspirational. You know, it gives you a good feeling. Like, yeah, come on, the fight is worth it, the good fight.
So. Yeah.
The headmistress, played by Jackie, was given an MBE for her courage in protecting her students.
Tragically, one girl was killed that day too. So her name was Wendy Luscombe. And there was never a trial for Lenny Lawson for her particular murder. That has remained unprosecuted, which is, an absolute tragedy. He left a trail of destruction behind him. He only died, 2006?
About 15 years ago.
Oh,
even in jail, he was still, such a weird, surprising person, still got up to things that you're like, how did you do that? How did you get away with that? Who let you do that?
I actually talked to two people. Actually, a friend of mine was teaching pottery at Goulburn Jail, and he realised he had Lenny Lawson in his class. Somebody pointed him out, and then...
Wow.
Even at Grafton Supermax, he was head of the library and the art society. And people that met him there said he was charming and
charming
quiet.
Charming person.
And a classic psychopathic manipulator.
Yeah, just seems normal on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And he convinced some very clever women to... Mm. He got past them. You know, he... Whatever it was that he could see in them that he could... that he thought that they... would be appealed to. He managed to twist himself into that direction to achieve that. So, so the actor who's playing Lenny is amazing, and Chris Miller is his name, and poor guys had to do some very dark research into, some psychopathic behaviours and narcissistic behaviour.
How did you, recover from that?
Oh, I think he'll be glad. He'll probably be glad to take some therapy after the end of the show, but he's a total pro. But yes, and the other thing is with the prevalency of content around true crime or, even narcissistic profiling and that kind of thing, every day one of us come to rehearsal going, oh, so did you listen to that podcast or are you watching Mindhunter on Netflix or did you read about Ted Bundy or whatever? And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of content. And this happens all the time. And again, harking back to, current times, with Weinstein and the Me Too movement and manipulation, it's like it's always a reminder that you think you might be safe and then you don't know if the person you're talking to is going to be selling you something. You don't understand the agenda behind it.
Mm. It's everywhere from the entertainment industry to, possibly even the banking industry, given recent news.
Oh, yes. It's everywhere.
It is. Mm. So we're trying to do, this show, people actually walk through this 150-year-old sandstone warehouse And they're led by a guide, ably played by Kyla Ward.
She's wonderful.
She's amazing.
She's a really good people wrangler, and she's really good at bringing people in, but she's also got that wonderful way of cultivating story and atmosphere. So she's an absolute, she's a gem.
Kind of think Morticia in the Addams Family. But people move through the three stories. So we've got scenes, we've got projection, we've got original artwork, we've got pictures representing the past, projectors going in two different areas. So it's quite...
It's definitely a dynamic show. And it's also the kind of show that if you haven't been to the Rocks Discovery Museum, it's an opportunity to see that space, which is really cool. A lot of stairs.
Good workout.
But it's amazingly evocative space as well. And the connection to history. Steve, remind us why it's called Dead House.
Ah, it's called Dead House because they still are, but up in, particularly in the 500 years leading up to the about 100 years ago, bodies were kept in dead houses because the ground was frozen in Europe and et cetera.
Yeah.
And they couldn't bury them. So they put them in basically buildings called dead houses. And morgues, when they emerged more recently, has still got the name Dead House. And there's a number of tours in the Rocks Police and Justice Museum ghost tours, and they make reference to the building. So the building's still there in Lower George Street.
Yeah.
Now an art gallery, just near the overseas passenger terminal. And so we're just a block away. So there's this connection.
Yeah. It's like a bloodline.
How is it working in such a historical space?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yes. It's one of those things where if you get to, you know, you touch the sandstone walls and it's wonderful certainly playing Louisa because Louisa spent 6 months incarcerated, not knowing every time she thought that she was free, she was locked up again, touching the walls. And it's the same kind of walls that she would have been touching while she was on Darlinghurst Jail, that kind of same.
Yeah, she was in the women's wing in Darlinghurst Jail, which I visited last week. And the interior is identical. And she spent 6 months in there, and then when she was finally sentenced, there was a gallows in the yards of Darlinghurst Jail, which is where she was hung.
Hanged. Sorry, I'm a grammar nerd. touching sandstone walls that have Australian history, but Sydney's, you know, history. It's a real tactile experience, really rich, you know. You don't get that touching, you know, fibro walls.
No, I'm sure not.
And it all happened around there. There's photographs of Leonard Lawson coming out of the coroner's court just across the road from where we're performing. And we've got a wonderful production designer who's sourced an